Bonsoir et bienvenue dans Nobody Cares, l'émission culturelle des gens qui prennent très au sérieux les sujets dont tout le monde se fout. Ce soir, peut-être que vous vous en foutrez un petit peu moins puisque on interview Kevin Smith. Donc, enjoy. Okay, so thank you. We are with Kevin Smith, which you may know for Clerks or Jersey Girl.
Or you may know as the fat guy that got thrown off the plane. That happened once as well. The fat guy who won't shut up. The fat guy who always wears the same shirt. These are all the names that I have on the internet.
No, it's not a shirt. It's a flag.
It's a flag. It is a flag. Yeah. Good point. Tell them why you think it's a flag. I thought that was so beautiful. I met Aisha. Aisha?
Yeah.
Aisha, but no S, just the C, right?
Yeah.
I met Aisha the other day, and she said that the jersey is like a flag because it is a, it's, what is it?
For all the misfits, it's not just a jersey, it's a flag.
I love that. That was so awesome. Thank you.
Okay, so within the last few years, you've been more all over the place. With TV shows like Spoilers or Comic Book Man, and a podcast empire, obviously, and your Twitter account, which is kind of burning. And so that was something that I was talking about with a friend. And so he wanted me to ask you if you thought that movies became less important for you, and if you understood that some of your fans we might think that since Red State, a Kevin Smith movie doesn't have the same meaning that 50 years ago.
Yeah, it's true. Let me see. Well, how to answer that? I guess the first part. Go back to the first part because it was multi-part. Just the sentence before the last sentence.
Since Red State,
before Kevin, that Red State part.
Did movie became less movie, important?
Beautiful, okay. And that is connected.
And you answered that in the masterclass, I think. But yeah.
No, I'll give you a better one.
Yeah.
I got to a place with movies where it wasn't movies didn't lose their luster. It was the process, marketing, all the business that goes along with show became so disinteresting and so punching through water. Everything was slowed down. When you're inspired, when creativity hits you, no matter what it is, you just want to go. You know, when the muse speaks to you, or the muse, Jason Muse, you just want to seize it, and you want to make that moment come to life as quickly as possible. Now, the problem with movie making is usually you're asking somebody for money to do this, and that's a big decision for people to make. If you're like, I need a couple million bucks, like, whoa. So my problem has always been, I wished I could have made a movie that was successful enough that it made a big kitty of money that I could stick in a bank and just use that, so I would never have to go to somebody else and be like, can you finance this movie? Because then you'd be unstoppable. Like, the beauty of podcasting is you don't have to wait. Like, you have the idea, you sit down, you start talking with somebody, and you're already in the art. With film, there's so many steps and so much money and so many layers where it may fall apart and it might not happen. You don't have that with podcasting. Very simple storytelling. So for me, I didn't grow like, oh, I'm not interested in making movies. It was the process of selling the movie and people marketing the movie. All that stuff just seemed disinteresting to me. It really started with Clerks, because Clerks 2 cost $5 million, and then they spent $10 million marketing it. And that broke my brain. I'm like, we could have used $10 million to make the movie better. I paid people less. I paid people like way less than they normally get, because we were trying to make the movie inexpensively, and then you just spent $10 million to put on TV ads and stuff. So I just gotten frustrated with that. And then, you know, with Red State, I mean, also in combination with that, like, I just finished Cop Out, and Bruce Willis was, will try.
I read that.
Even Christ himself would have been like, fuck you, and walked away from Bruce Willis. So that also made me feel like, if this is what I'm supposed to be heading toward, like, ultimately you start small and you hope to be directing big movie stars and making big movies. And if that's what the end result was, if that was my prize, I didn't fucking want it. Like, there was nothing about it that was interesting to me. Anybody could have made that movie. You know, it was a script somebody else wrote. So a lot of people probably would have made a better version of that movie, too. So that left me a little like, ugh. Like, the people, because of the Bruce experience, I was just like, I don't even want to be in this business anymore. The fact that a person like that could exist and succeed for so long makes me sad that I'm in the same industry. So it was just enough of a reason to be like, I'm done. I'm happy with what I've done. I'll make Clerks 3 to finish it up, and that'll be nice symmetry from Clerks to Clerks 3, and my career will be capped, and then I'll walk away and do podcasts forever. And I was able to do that for 3 years until that one podcast that brought me back to film. And then in making Tusk, I fell in love with the process again in a big bad way. And I didn't care about the marketing. That's something to be figured out later on and stuff. The only thing I cared about is we didn't sell it to somebody that was going to pour a lot of money on it, because the budget was going to be under $3 million. So I looked around at a company that I thought might be good for us, something that was like a Miramax, but Miramax doesn't quite exist anymore the way it did. So A24 was the closest thing. They put out Spring Breakers in such a way where I'm not a Harmony Korine fan. And I know he's no fan of mine. But the fact that that movie went to double digits in the year 2013, like, this wasn't the late 90s. Like, that was impressive. And as much as you would like to say, hey, it's the movie itself, it was the company behind that movie sold it so insanely well. I also liked the job that they did on Bling Ring, the Sofia Coppola movie and stuff. So this was a company I immediately liked. I said, all right, well, let's lean towards these cats, because they seem to do it smart. They don't overspend. They do a lot of online, a lot of viral and shit like that. And their trailers are clever, and they just feel like hip. They feel like Miramax did in 1994. So those cats aren't about spending. They're about doing it kind of strategically and smartly. So then all of a sudden, like, the whole, like, what's going to happen with the marketing just went out the window, and I could just sit there and concentrate on making the movie. And we had such a blast, because I'd never really made a movie like that before. Even Red State was a movie that was very personal, because, like, my brother was gay. My friend had, my gay friend had sat down and interviewed Fred Phelps, and I watched this terrifying interview, and I just wanted to lash out at these hate mongers and stuff. So even that came from a personal place. Tusk is just a movie for the sake of being a movie. The same way David Cronenberg, you know, makes a movie for the sake of being a movie. The same way David Lynch makes a fucked up movie for the sake of being a fucked up movie. So it doesn't come from some personal place, although we've all heard, if you listen to the podcast, the origin of that movie. And oddly enough, it is kind of personal, but it just doesn't, it's not the same thing I did with Clerks, where I'm like, Clerks is a story about me and my friends at a convenience store. Chasing Amy is a story about me and Joey Adams when we were dating. Mallrats is a story about what I used to do at the mall when I was a kid with my friends. Dogma is about my Catholicism. And this one, I mean, Cop Out was the first movie that, like, had nothing to do with me whatsoever. It was me doing somebody else's script. But I figured out a way to make a film that has nothing, does not pull from my heart or soul, that is still valid and still wonderful and still engaging, but just not the way that I'm used to doing it, the way I trained myself to do it forever, and the way I never strayed from doing, because I was like, this is what they like. You know, it's a tender trap when you make your first flick and people really like it and it gets picked up, because you're like, well, shit, I don't want to rock this boat, man. I got to keep doing this over and over again. And then you get to a point where you're like, that's not what got you here. Doing the same thing over and over again would never get you through the front fucking door. What got you through the front fucking door is you said something original. Somebody had never heard that before, but felt it. And when they heard it, they were like, fuck, he's right. So I was like, all right, be that guy, man. And that's kind of what Tusk is. So I understand some people being like, you know, it's changed the definition of what a Kevin Smith film is. But, you know, give it a few years and it'll fall in, it'll be a new definition, you know what I'm saying? And maybe there'll be different parts to it where, like, that's View Askew Kevin Smith and this is horror Kevin Smith.
Yeah.
I mean, the idea is to keep it as interesting for yourself as possible. That way other people will find it interesting. Otherwise, people, the audience goes away and you're kind of fucked. So I feel like I should, if I'm excited, anyone who's interested in my shit will be excited. And then there's always a chance you get people outside of your fan base who might, like, hear about it. Like, you know, the movie, the Tusk movie is so strange. It's just one of those things where it's like, you'll hear people might hear about it and be like, a movie, they turn a guy into a walrus? Fuck it, I gotta see that. Even if they don't like Clerks or have never heard of me or something like that. So, you know, I guess what I'm getting at is, like, you got to redefine yourself. Even if everybody knows who you are, that's probably the most important time to redefine yourself. When everybody's like, oh, I know what a Kevin Smith movie is, then it's time to fucking flip the script. And so they don't know what a Kevin Smith movie is. That way they don't get comfortable and they don't get complacent and they don't get worse, resentful. Like, you keep giving us the same shit, motherfucker. So you give them something new every once in a while. Even if they don't like it, they're like, well, fuck, he's trying. You know, that's, at least he's going in a different direction or a new direction. So hopefully in time they'll come to think of Red State and Tusk as Kevin Smith films. But even if they didn't, even if they never called them a Kevin Smith film, I'd be fine. Just as long as they go, those movies are fucked up in a good way. Not like those movies are fucked and they're terrible, but just like, that was fucked up. I never saw something like that before. Then you feel like you've done something new.
Okay, so speaking about fucked up movies.
Yes.
This is one of my favorite movies of all time, and I've watched it like 39 times, counting. And so.
Which movie?
Southland Tales.
Southland Tales.
Okay, so.
I wish I can illuminate this movie for you. I was on the set. I don't even know what it's about.
I get it.
You get it perfectly?
Yeah. That's
Have you met Richard?
No, never.
He's a lovely guy, very gentle, very cool, but like he made two fucked up movies, Darko and fucking Southland Tales.
And Southland Tales, it's brilliant. And so.
But I'll tell you this, and don't look, I read the first draft of Southland Tales before he put it through a Darko filter. You know, with his and playing with the quasi-futuristic elements that he does or in the way that he does. And it was like Pulp Fiction, like a kind of 21st century Pulp Fiction. It was very ahead of its time. And then the next, he said, do you want to be in this movie? I was like, yeah, sure, absolutely. Then when he gave me the draft, the shooting draft.
Because you knew him personally?
I met him at, where did I meet him? I was in line, this is sound so stupid, but we were at the Grauman's Chinese Theater, me and my wife. I loved... Charlie's Angels.
Okay.
So when the Charlie's Angels 2 came out, I actually called somebody and be like, can I go to the premiere? I really want to see this movie. So I went to the premiere at Grauman's, and when I was standing in line, I was talking to Allie Larder, who was in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, and she was there with this young guy who seemed to know a lot about my movies. He was like, hey, man, I hear you just worked with Vilmos Zsigmond on Jersey Girl and blah, 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 blah. And we were in line for a while. It wasn't until we got to the doors that I was like, hey, man, what's your name? And he was just like, Richard Kelly. And I was like, Richard Kelly. Did you direct Donnie Darko? He's like, yeah. And I was like, holy shit. So we became friends off of that. And he had asked me at one point, he was just like, I'm casting this movie and I'm trying to cast it in a way where I take comedic actors and use them dramatically.
Yeah, that's what I love about the movie.
So John Lovitz and what's her name? Sherry O'Terry.
Sarah Michelle Gellar and Justin Timberlake. That's what I love about it. It's that it seems like such a critique. Like, he takes pop culture idols and then he used them to criticize the way Americans look at them.
Yes.
And that's what I love about this movie.
Most people didn't understand that.
You know that scene where Justin Timberlake dance and
doing I'm not, I got sold, the killer song.
The ending where he looks at the camera and his eyes are just like empty.
Yes.
And it's like the emptiness of it and the emptiness of what war did and so on. And that's like one of my favorite movie scene of all time.
I'm going to pass that on to him. That'll make his fucking life. He took a lot of shit with that movie. Like, I remember that movie got into Cannes.
Before
it was even done.
That broke my heart. I watched the reaction on YouTube, and I was like, you see Marilyn Manson getting up, and he's like, eh.
It was crazy. Like, and they went in with such goodwill. Like, people were like, yeah, we can't wait to see his follow-up to Donnie Darko. And then they really, like, slapped him around for it. And it was bold. Like, you know, whether it works or not, for an audience, it was insanely bold. And that's what you want of a filmmaker, particularly of his caliber.
Yeah.
So he gave them what everyone wanted. And they were like, we don't want that. But it's one of those movies they're not going to know they want until 10 years from now.
Yeah.
And then 10 years from now, more people will think like you and see it through your perspective and suddenly be like, that was a cool movie.
But I have to be honest, I downloaded the Cannes cut.
Mm-hmm.
Just to know.
You've only seen that or not seen that?
What?
Which cut have you seen? The can or post-can? You've seen both. Which one do you like? Post-can?
Post-can.
So they were right to kind of be like, take time out. It was long, I guess. Really long at one point.
Both are interesting, but maybe it's because I'm more used to the...
The shorter one?
Yeah. Okay, so... I guess we have to wrap it up.
No, you're good. You're good. Don't worry.
No, okay.
We'll be fine.
Okay.
You're good. Go. Don't worry. I'm the one that has to leave. And if I don't leave, we can still be here.
You've been very present on iTunes with all of your podcasts and so on. But to me, it all started with your Evening With, in a way.
Excellent point, yes.
Would you ever think of going back on stage to tell Hollywood stories now? Or are you just focusing more on your podcast when it comes to communicating with your fans? And do you think that the Red State of the Union tour broke the Evening With vibe? Or is it just that you moved on?
Yesterday I did a Q&A, and that's all Evening With is.
Yeah,
instead of sitting there and talking to a friend at a podcast or something, It's just me by myself going, what do you guys want to hear? So I did it like a lot, you know, and I can't avoid it every day. Like there's usually questions to answer and stuff, and I'm happy to do it. But in terms of like me going by myself and touring, I loved it. It was great. It was very lucrative, but it's more fun when you're hanging out with somebody. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, and at a certain point too, like when people ask, when you do Q&A a lot, there are only so many questions they ask.
Yeah.
And you know the answers to all of them. And you could tell very entertaining stories, but you run the risk of falling into rote memorization where it's just like, and now I'm going to tell the Superman story. And now I'm going to tell this story. And that's, it's fun and it's funny, but that's, you're not expanding at all. When I started sitting down with people, having conversations with Scott, with Ralph, with Jason, with Jennifer, with Andy, or with anybody on Fat Man on Batman, you can't do the same thing. You can't just fall into the same stories because you're in a moment, in a conversation about something usually unrelated to you. So it forces you to become a better, quicker thinker.
Yeah.
And a better editor as well. Because like, after I record the podcast, I sit there every episode and go through it and listen to it again and take out any air that's just dead or shit that don't work or whatever. And because of that, because I've been doing that for 7 years, I got better at film editing just because I was working on sound, just cutting the podcast. So the podcasts have really kind of, you know, given me so much, and I enjoy doing them so much, and they're fun to sit down. It's really a hoot to sit down with somebody. Like we were in London, we just did Hollywood Babylon, 3,600 people, the place was fucking packed, and they're all shouting, Garmy, Garmy. It's cool. I get to see my friends do well and stuff. But at the same time, the evening with will never go away. Like now as I head back into Tusk, I mean, that's going to happen more because I'll come out after the movie and answer lots of questions just like I did back in the day. But, you know, I felt like we did, what was it, 4 DVDs or something like that? 3 or 4? And it felt like, okay, let's take a little break. Honestly, somebody on the internet, it's always somebody on the internet. It's me. I'm done. I'm almost being, I'm going. There's somebody on the internet who said, Kevin Smith is so arrogant. He has 4 movies where he just sits there and talks. And I suddenly got fucking scared. I was like, ew, do they think I'm arrogant? Like, I'm not going to do this anymore. So we stopped doing the evening with. And then I started sitting with Jason or sitting with somebody else. And that was a little easier. But now as we head back into, like with Tusk, I'm going to have to explain it. I'm going to have to walk out there and be like, oh, let me tell you what happened, because it's a very weird movie. So that will probably bring the Q&A back. And I don't mind telling stories. Like, when I just did the London Q&A, Manchester, when we did the Jay and Bob Get Old tour, we did the show as a Q&A, so we did like an hour there and stuff. And Jason was answering questions too, but it feels like it would be like Jason Lee was once a professional skateboarder, and then he retired 9 years into his career. He had a literal career where he won awards, made money, and then he was like, I don't want to do this anymore, I'm going to be an actor. So he went off to become an actor, and then while you're an actor, they don't let you skateboard because you could fucking hurt yourself and shit like that, ruin the movie. So he didn't skateboard for a while. And then one day he was like, I picked up my board and went for a ride. And he was like, it was like being a child again. And now he fucking boards with his kid and stuff like that. So I feel like the Q&A for me is going to be like the skateboard for him, where it's like, I may put it down, but I'll always be able to pick it up and be like, hey, because that's my favorite thing to do, is to like, what do you want to know? All right, I'll fucking tell you and stuff. Yeah. And as long as people are interested in asking me questions, I'm more than interested, obviously, to give them responses.
Well, we will always be interested in asking you questions. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. See, you got more than two questions.
I see my hopes and dreams lying on the ground.